tuned in to People's Tribune Radio. I'm Kenny Shook.
We can't solve the problems of anybody without solving the problems of those who have the least. The world could be a beautiful place where everybody has access to not just food and housing and water and clothing, just very basics, but also everybody could have access to all the world's knowledge, all the world's culture at their fingertips. Humanity could really, really flourish with what science and technology makes possible. The only thing standing in the way is this system of exploitation. That's the only thing standing in the way.
People's Tribune Radio is brought to you by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, who also publishes the newspaper People's Tribune, Tribuno del Pueblo. Ordering and contact information will be provided later in the program. Revolution is a term constantly tossed around in U.S. society. We see billboards and commercials where an auto manufacturer tributes an American revolution to their new line of automobiles. Satellite radio is revolutionary in its technology. But what is revolution? Who is a revolutionary? While people have their own understandings of what a revolution is in our capitalist consumer society, none should be fooled by any corporate claim to be of, for, or concerned with revolution. Politically, we hear nothing of revolution from the status quo. Democrat, Republican, liberal, conservative, officials care nothing about change for the people. All we hear about are new reforms and new concessions. Regardless, revolution is not spoken of seriously in mainstream politics. However, a large portion of people identify themselves as revolutionaries. Probably not the marketing people who created the automobile slogan, American Revolution, nor the satellite radio industry. They're just revolutionary because they created a new product. What about the people who want to create a new society, a new system? Today we hear from revolutionary Beth Gonzalez about what being a revolutionary means to her and why revolutionaries need to unite.
Okay, my name is Beth Gonzalez. Been a revolutionary since I was in high school and was finally able to find an organization and some people who knew what it really meant to be a revolutionary.
How you doing, Beth Gonzalez?
Oh, real good. It's really good to talk with you today.
You wrote an article in the July 2003 People's Tribune titled An Appeal to Revolutionaries. I was hoping you could first define or identify how you view a revolutionary and then maybe describe why revolutionaries are important for the future of humanity.
Okay, well, when we say a League of Revolutionaries for a New America, by revolutionaries we mean people who are against the system, people who see the injustices going on and want to do something about it, who want to get rid of the system that produces hunger and homelessness and war and torture and decadence and corruption and so on and so forth, and just overall human destruction. So it's people who want to put an end to that destructiveness of this capitalist system. And all the League is about is uniting these revolutionaries who are fighting against the system and beginning to unite all the revolutionaries from different walks of life around what the solution is to that. These problems can be resolved if we just get rid of the rights of private property and reorganize society around the needs of people. So there's distribution of the abundance of society according to what people need. And sometimes that sounds like just some technical words. But there's one example, I think, that really drives the point home. We have some members who are in Detroit, Michigan, and they've been very actively involved in a fight around a very, very basic necessity of life, which is water, where thousands and thousands of people who cannot afford to pay their bills are getting their water cut off. And this is a city that's right on Great Lakes. It's surrounded by water, but they can't afford the fee per month, which is really high there. People are without water for months and months and months. And at the same time, there's a company there, you know, in Michigan, Ice Mountain Water Company, that is just getting it. I think they just pay a fee of $87 a year or something, and they can just take all the water they want from Lake Michigan and put it in little bottles and whatever they have to do to it and sell it and make money off of it. So the idea is that corporations have private property in the sense of not just things, but the ability to make profit, and they get all the rights, and people who just need water to bathe their kids, to heat their homes, to cook their meals, they don't have any rights to water. They have to pay thousands of dollars a year for water for just basic necessities. So there's something wrong there. So in that sense, we're talking about a solution of getting rid of the rights of exploitation and replacing it with providing people with what they need. And there's certainly the technological ability to do that. So that's a long way around what we see as the basic solution. But as an organization of revolutionaries, we want to just unite people from all walks of life who want to end that exploitation and work various ways to educate people about what the solution is.
Could you describe a little bit more about private property and exploitation and how those are tied together?
Private property isn't just things. It's not just what the house you own or the clothes or the books or the car or whatever. Private property is the ownership of the means of production, the wherewithal to make people work for you and pay them just for their time, but you get the product of their labor. And they're capable of producing a whole lot more in a day than they are, than what it takes to feed them and clothe them and house them for a given day. So private property is the ability to exploit, to take advantage of other people's labor for your own profit.
Thank you. For this period in history, you mentioned two threats in your article. You talked a little bit about dangers from political operatives and ideological groupings, and you talked about this hold that they have on American institutions. And the first threat you mentioned was returning to pre-1900 life, level of life. And the second threat, I'm going to quote it here, was the challenge to our sense of humanity, our capacity to comprehend our place in the world and our role in making it a better place. Could you maybe expand on those threats?
Okay, yeah, and I think since that article was written, it's probably even more real to more people. On the first one, this little clique of people who are clamping their hold on various institutions, I think the whole country sees this little clique that's clamped its hold on this administration and on the Defense Department, just without regard for the facts, without regard to positions of experts, without regard to history, without regard to the consequences, have just gone in and made just a brutal mess of somebody else's country, you know, just gone over to Iraq. And there are even people within the Defense Department who are now, who have maybe resigned or taken early retirement or whatever, who are coming out with these statements saying that the process is entirely politicized, that people who are running the show don't even listen to the facts. They just have their conclusions and they tell people to get the information that supports those conclusions. And of course, the result we have now is just, you know, as everybody knows, this incredible torture going on at the hands of U.S. military and U.S. private contractors, torture of Iraqi prisoners. The world is aghast. And this is partly a result of just one of these examples of these cliques that are getting a hold of things. Now, it doesn't mean that that's outside of the confines of what capitalism needs. That's a product of capitalism, to just go in and clear aside in Iraq any barriers to capitalists making their money there, any barriers to the rights of private property is what it really comes down to. So it's something that comes out of capitalism, but it takes certain individuals to do it, and it's taken these little cliques doing this stuff. And it's not just in these bastions of power, but also in the sense of military and political power, but also they're just moral polarization going on in various institutions, like in various churches, where the right wing is just making a battle for institutional control of certain denominations. So this is going on throughout society. The other threat, the threat to our sense of humanity, I think again is made real and immediate by these current events. That how can a people sit by when other people are just being murdered and tortured and their land being taken over? How can people sit by when right in the streets of our cities, in the trailer parks of our towns, where people are without food, where kids are going without education, where kids feel they have no future and they just feel the social destruction, they just feel that they're not worth anything? So we have in our own country, we have just this incredible feeling of hopelessness and destruction. Either some people don't care about it. Some people maybe care about it but aren't clear what to do about it. So in that sense, a sense of humanity, that we are human beings and we should care about other human beings and there's a problem, we better fix it. That sense of humanity is, on the one hand, is being beaten down, by the horrors throughout the world and the violations of basic human rights, economic human rights, just violations of humanity. But on the other hand, there are people who are stepping up to the plate on a moral level and saying, we've got to do something about this. And we rely on that. We really appeal to that there are millions of people in this country who do have a conscience and who really do want to do something on the right side of morality in the real sense of what's right for humanity. And that's what we have confidence in, and we unite with the revolutionaries out there who stand on the side of that sense of morality and the sense of what's right for humanity and doing something about the horrors taking place throughout the world at the hands of our country, our government.
You're tuned into People's Tribune Radio. We are speaking with revolutionary Beth Gonzalez about her People's Tribune article and appeal to revolutionaries. One of the things you really stress in your article in doing something to better humanity is the role of history. Perhaps you can talk about the importance of understanding stages in history.
Okay, well, I think if we look at our own country, the whole struggle against slavery went through various stages. And since the beginning of slavery, there were people who were morally opposed to it and continually campaigned against slavery, tried to awaken people to the immorality of slavery. But at later stages of the development of our country economically and politically, and there came a point where economically there were different interests, where the slave power, those who owned slaves and had political power, were blocking the economic development and social well-being of people in other parts of the country by the fact of their having political power, you know, over the country as a whole. So at that point, there were the practical interests as well as the moral interests against slavery. And there were people like that various abolitionists, John Brown, William Lloyd Garrison, just all sorts of heroic abolitionists, and also people who were taking the practical and political steps against slavery. Then there are other questions where we look at stages of development, where it's an entirely different kind of thing when we look at what's happening today in this country at this time.
And how do you view this stage of development this time?
Well, actually, I guess maybe to just step back a little bit, I mentioned I became a revolutionary when I was in high school, and at that time there was more and more people were getting involved in the struggle against the war our country was waging against Vietnam, but also against the denial of people's civil rights and denial of equality. Now, these questions of justice and equality were things that our history books had promised. They said, this is what our country is founded on, and we believed that, and we fought for that. We fought for justice, and we fought for equality. Those were really hopeful times. The economy was expanding, and the movements for equality and justice were growing. It became clearer and clearer to more and more people that this was the right thing to do, but it also, particularly on the questions of equality and the ending of legal segregation, that it became clear that that was what the economy needed too. So those times were hopeful, and it was great to enlist in a struggle for justice that was moving forward and making gains. These times are not so hopeful. At first glance, they're not real hopeful. And the reason I say that is because we are just entering into the early stages of the development of a revolution and revolutionary process in this country. That beginning around those times that were hopeful, there was the beginning of changes in the economy, the beginning of the application of electronics to production, which began changing the economy in big, big ways. And you could see the economic polarization. Even if many people lost their jobs, people who didn't lose their jobs got lower wages, got, you know, health benefits taken away, and so on and so forth. So that first stage of a revolution is when the economy is disrupted. And on that basis, everything in society gets disrupted and thrown out of whack, whereas before people could count on getting a decent job in a factory and you get health benefits and pensions, and whether you went to high school or not, you could afford to send your kids to college, and all that has been disrupted by changes in the economy. We're in the one stage of this process where society is disrupted and people are beginning to fight to try to solve the problems presented by that changed economic situation. That's a stage of the process that really calls for the type of organization of revolutionaries that the League is trying to be. That is, not everybody has to be united on every little fine point of how things are going to happen or exactly what's going to happen in the future, but we do need a broad core of revolutionaries, very large core of revolutionaries who can talk about what the solution is, that the problem is not just foreign competition or immigrants or this bad guy or that bad guy. The problem is this disruption in the economy, and the capitalist system can no longer provide for people, and that there is a solution to these problems, and that's the reorganization of society around the needs of those people who have nothing in this system. So that's a stage we're at, and it's important to have an organization of revolutionaries that unites simply on that basis, not on this idea or that idea or somebody else's revolution or a different country's revolution, but really on the basis of a simple solution that is reorganizing society around the needs of the people in our society who have been driven down to poverty, the people who have no work, the people who have no health care, people whose water gets cut off or whose gas gets cut off in the winter in Chicago, people who have jobs but have really low-wage jobs and their health benefits are drying up, young people who can't afford education and try to go to school by working three different jobs to make their way through, and maybe some of them give up or they end up with all these thousands and thousands of dollars of debt afterwards. So basically to reorganize society around that, the basic, very, very general interests of that section of the population that has nothing, that can't really survive anymore in this system, even if they have this little job or that little job. And in that way, that will meet the interests of all of society. There's no section of society except this tiny, tiny gang of people with more money than they know what to do with. All of society has problems now. People who had decent jobs and now they can't afford the health care. It's just all of society is being disrupted. We can't solve the problems of anybody without solving the problems of those who have the least.
A lot of people are still trying to say that, well, if people still work hard enough, they can reach the American dream. Or if they look long enough, they'll get that job. Or if they're willing to settle, you know, they might have had a decent job before, but maybe they can get a job working something less than what they had before. How has the introduction of electronics changed this to where people might not be able to access even a job that won't be as good?
Yeah, I guess it's kind of a mixed bag. I think some people still probably think they can get that, and then if they don't get the American dream, then they feel that they, as individuals, have done something wrong, because that dream has, you know, it's part of the culture of our country, so people still have it. And then, of course, there's some individuals who can rapidly make a lot of money over a short term. For every one of those who continues to make it, there's at least one of those guys who falls back down to poverty or to instability. I'm talking about these tech people in the technology industry and so on who make all this money, only to find a year later that they just can't find a job anywhere. But in a broader sense, I think what it does is it means that with electronics, it means it takes even less labor or fewer workers or less time by workers to produce any given thing. So that means that there's less work. On the one hand, people have fewer job opportunities. On the other hand, the wages are driven down because people are competing more for the jobs, and because it takes less to actually produce, in a sense, goods that's the equivalent of sustaining somebody. So people get paid less and less for what they do. But the other thing is that it also makes it possible to ship these jobs all over the world, where, you know, everybody knows these stories now where if you're making a reservation for airline or tying to your credit card company or whatever, you don't know where the people are that you're talking to. They could be in India or the Philippines or England or whatever. I heard a story even about Great Britain a few months ago where even medical operations, British people are being sent to India to have operations rather than to have them in England for certain operations because it can just be done cheaper there. So even something that you would just think can't can't be exported, like healthcare. Even some aspects of that are even being exported around the world. So it allows the corporations to take the work where the wages are lower. And so it's just been a tremendous disruption of the ability of people to get jobs. And then the jobs that are available are, in general, the lower-paying jobs. So part of it is, what has it done to people's ability to make it? It's really hurt the ability of most people to really make it, to meet that dream. But I think it varies as to the extent to which people still believe in that dream. A lot of people still think they're going to make it, and if they don't, they feel it's their fault. Or if they see somebody who can't make it, they feel it's their fault. They don't realize that that person is working three jobs, trying to go through school, trying to support a couple kids, whatever it is. There's just so much that goes into sustaining yourself these days that I know is different from when I started out in the work world. I worked as an unskilled factory worker, and I was able to take care of myself on basically at minimum wage. Minimum wage today can't support one person, much less a family. I think the other thing that's connected with this is this question of what this technology is capable of. Even though these times today don't seem hopeful, we in the League really feel a sense of hope for humanity, in the sense that this technology and science, even broader than technology, the science that's available to put an end to human illness within a few decades, you know, the science is there. It's coming together in the laboratories, and the scientists say that a lot of things could be possible in the next several decades. But the point is that that promises great hope, and so we have a vision in the sense of that the world doesn't have to be this way, that with all this science and technology, that the world could be a beautiful place where everybody has access to not just food and housing and water and clothing, to just very basics, but also everybody could have access to all the world's knowledge, all the world's culture, just at their fingertips. And humanity could really, really flourish with what science and technology makes possible. The only thing standing in the way is this system of exploitation. That's the only thing standing in the way. And that's why we dedicate ourselves in the League. We dedicate ourselves to, in various ways, whether marching in the streets or talking on the radio or writing books or writing poetry or preaching in the churches, whatever it is, to getting across this basic sense of hope to the American people that the world doesn't have to be this way, and that there is a solution, and that's just simply to get rid of this system of exploitation, much like the abolitionists said, hey, let's just get rid of this system of slavery. And it was done through struggle and educating and convincing the American people, we have to overturn these slave owners. Well, we have to get rid of this system of exploitation.
You're tuned into People's Tribune Radio. We are speaking with revolutionary Beth Gonzalez about her People's Tribune article and appeal to revolutionaries. You've kind of spoken a little bit about the vision of the League. This article was written in honor of the 10th anniversary of the League. Perhaps you can just share what is the League and why it's important.
Okay, well, as you said, we were formed 10 years ago. Well, now 11 years ago. We were formed 11 years ago, and revolutionaries are everywhere in this country. They're marching in the streets. They're talking to the people around them. They're trying to educate people around them. But any task that needs to be done needs an organization to do it. And the League of Revolutionaries is two simple things. One is an organization with a sense of vision, with a sense of solution, that we can achieve this vision if we get rid of exploitation, if we have a society free from exploitation. That's the one basic thing, to unite the revolutionaries around that understanding. And the sense that as revolutionaries, we can cooperate together. People have various fields of expertise, various skills, various connections with various parts of the population, knowledge about different parts of the population, knowledge about how to talk to people in different aspects of society. And if we can do this together, if the revolutionaries of this country who are concerned about getting rid of exploitation and realizing this vision of a world that's possible can work together and accomplish what needs to be done at this point, which is to educate the American people about the need to just get rid of exploitation and have a society to meet the needs of the people and deliver what science and technology makes possible. That's what's needed at this stage, and that we need an organization just so we can work together to accomplish that, combine our energies to accomplish what needs to be done at this point.
All right, Beth Gonzalez, do you have any other last words you'd like to state?
I guess the only thing is that I know that there are millions of people out there who care about humanity the way we do in the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, and we invite you to join with us. Get in touch with us, figure out ways to work together. We invite you to join the organization. We invite you to just talk with us and figure out if there are ways that we can work together, combine our energies. And we hope to hear from many people out there who we know are there, who have a conscience and want to take some decisive action on the side of that conscience and do something about what's happening in the world today.
Thanks for being with us, Beth Gonzalez.
Thank you very much, Kenny. It's been great.
That is it for our interview with revolutionary Beth Gonzalez. Considering we have a bit of time, I wanted to share with listeners a poem from Jack Hirschman, another revolutionary and world-renowned poet from San Francisco. He shared this poem with PT Radio correspondent Tony Zaragoza during a phone interview. It is titled Act.
Act in the name of those washing others' clothes and cleansing others' filth from the whiteness. In the name of those caring for others' children and selling their labor power in the form of maternal love and humiliations. In the name of those living in another's house, which isn't even a kind belly, but a tomb or a jail. In the name of those eating others' crumbs and chewing them still with the feeling of a thief. In the name of those living on others' land, the houses and factories and shops, streets, cities and towns, rivers, lakes, volcanoes and mountains, always belong to others, and that's why the cops and the guards are there, guarding them against us. In the name of those who have nothing but hunger, exploitation, disease, a thirst for justice and water, persecutions and condemnations, loneliness, abandonment, oppression and death. I accuse private property of depriving us of everything.
That concludes this edition of People's Tribune Radio. PT Radio is brought to you by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America. The League advocates for a cooperative society, where people rally and reorganize around the basic necessities of individuals whose needs the capitalist system cannot meet. If you would like to contact the League, you can do so by calling 1-800-691-6888. That toll-free number once again is 1-800-691-6888, or visit us on the web at www.lrna.org. On behalf of the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, thanks for listening, and we invite you to join us next time for People's Tribune Radio.